Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where Dr. Janine Krause, that's me, gives you, a health junkie, a weekly dose of tools to help you increase your energy and resilience to life stressors.
Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of the Health Fix. I've got Kathleena, the allergy chef, on again because we have so much to talk about that we've just decided we're just going to make it a regular thing. So get used to it, folks. It's happening. So today we're going to be talking about, where does your food exactly come from? Like, who owns the company that brings you the food to you? You know, like, where's it coming from? Because one of the biggest factors I find, and Kathleen and I talked about this, but I just saw this like 2 weeks ago with one of my patients. Like, we had eliminated all of the allergen foods, but he wasn't feeling any better. And we're like, okay, where do you get all your food from? And he's like, well, I shop the grocery store. You know, I get all my things, you know, XYZ main grocery stores. And I was like, we might need to kind of figure out where, like, a farmer for you, or we need to turn you into one. So we're going to talk all about that today. Wow.
Yeah. That is a trip that you had someone like that, because, you know, for those of you who might be wondering it. Oh, and by the way, it's great to be back. Like, I love these conversations and I love that we can just jump in. Yeah. For people wondering, so let's say you go to a grocery store and you see a package of cookies with a green label, right? And then next to that is a package of cookies with a blue label. And they're both chocolate chip cookies, let's say, okay? You as a consumer think two separate companies, but the truth is they're actually owned by the same parent company. And you can actually easily find this out. All you have to do is pick up the package. If you turn it over on the back, if a parent company is involved, it'll say their name somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. And in case you're thinking this is strictly like non-organic or conventional foods, this happens in the natural and organic space as well, right? And then of course you have it where conventional, like long-standing conventional companies are buying out natural and organic companies, okay? Mm-hmm. And that, of course, that became a red flag, I wanna say like maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Does that sound about right to you? Maybe even a little bit longer. My timelines get a little bit messed up. When it first really started happening at a larger scale, right? And that's kind of when people in the natural and organic space were like, well, wait. We were trying to get away from those people, and now they own our food again. What's with that? What gives? And the bigger question was always, are they going to tamper with what we're buying, right? Because when you pay $8 for a box of cookies, which, by the way, I think is pretty crazy. But I mean, you got to really love your cookies to pay that much. Not that I don't love cookies. I actually really love cookies. When you're paying that much for a box of cookies, you are expecting a certain level of quality at that point, right?
Yeah.
You better believe that most likely you've read the ingredients and you've investigated the company and you want things to be a certain way. So when company giant A comes and buys out your cookie maker, of course you're going to wonder, like, is it still the same? Mm-hmm. Or like, am I now going to be getting a diluted product, still paying the $8? You know, here's a great example. When Amazon bought Whole Foods, right? Yeah. Is that not like the greatest example of our day? They have done some super shady stuff since then. And leading up to the buyout, they were starting to do some shady things, and then it just got considerably worse. You know, it's like the quality and availability of options has definitely declined. Mm-hmm. And we're just kind of seeing like this, I don't want to say commercialization because it was already a commercialized product, but more like, I don't know, the conventionalization of something that should have never been conventionalized, right? Whole Foods was always supposed to be this like refuge, right? It was supposed to be this great grocery store where you could find like the local, legit local quality foods and different things. And now it's like, nope.
No, it's just not. Disturbing. It's disturbing. I mean, the 365 brand in and of itself, I look at it and I go, how different is this from Walmart? And I've heard rumors that it's the same buyers for Whole Foods as it is Walmart. I don't know if that's true though.
I haven't heard that one, and yet I'm not super shocked, right? And so it's like, I oftentimes will question, like, is this, like, what kind of quality of organic am I getting right now? You know what I mean? Because we know that organic from certain countries is not the kind of food you want to be eating. And so it's like, when I'm looking at the sourcing of things, I'm going, you know, I think I'm just going to go to the co-op in the city. I don't want to shop at Whole Foods. In fact, we only buy two things at Whole Foods now. We used to exclusively shop at Whole Foods and then get some supplementary stuff at like Costco, because they have a great affordable organic section and stuff like that. And then probably within a year after the buyout, we didn't really shop there very much. It was really sporadic. And then now we're down to like literally two products from Whole Foods, because I don't inherently trust them the way I used to, you know? And maybe that's kind of the key, right? Like, we as consumers, and we all have this ability to vote with our wallet, right? Mm-hmm. And if something makes you uncomfortable, or the idea of it or whatever, don't buy it, right? Like, you have that freedom to take your dollars somewhere else. Just how, you know, looking at the green cookies and the blue cookies, if you look at them and see that they're owned by a parent company that you don't agree with, looking at you, Pepsi Cola, and you don't want that kind of stuff, keep looking at the packages, right? Keep going down the cookie aisle, because we all know there's at least 40 brands to choose from, or at least what we think are 40 brands to choose from. And on that cookie aisle somewhere, there's going to be at least one brand that's independently owned still, right? So it's all about understanding who owns it. And then, of course, you might be wondering, why is this even important? Why are they having this conversation today? I'll tell you why it's important. Because when we look at the quality of food, when we look at how sick people are today, right? Like, when we look at recorded human history, there's never been so many sick people before. Never, right? We look at what they're trying to convince us is normal in children. 1 in 5 with this, 1 in 7 with this, 1 in 12 with this, 1 in 13 with that. Like, they want us to think that stuff is normal. It's not. Yeah. You know, you rewind. I mean, at this point, you have to rewind almost 50 years to get a better picture of health. But you rewind 50, 80, 100 years, people weren't sick like this.
Yeah.
And not enough people are saying why. Mm-hmm. Not enough people are taking that radical responsibility for their health. And, you know, the thing about radical responsibility, you don't even have to go it alone, right? I think sometimes people get scared off by that idea. Like, what do you mean I have to take responsibility for my own health and, you know, do these, like, I'm not a doctor. I'm not asking you to be a doctor, right? I'm asking you to learn. I'm asking you to research. I'm asking you to then find resources and, you know, trusted doctors who can then help you on your journey without necessarily like taking you down further on your path of like ill health. Because for as much as I love Western medicine for heart attacks and things like that, it's not awesome for chronic illness. It just isn't, right? They don't, their mentality is not, let's get you back to being a fully functional 100% adult so that you don't need me, right? That should actually be the goal of your doctor. Your doctor, if your doctor's goal is not to like have you leave them, then what's the point? Do you know what I mean?
Oh my God, absolutely.
I mean, isn't that kind of the point of being a doctor, is to heal people? And if you've healed them, they don't need you?
More or less. Or they basically are, you know, I'm the guide, right? If something goes off rails, then you come back and see me. But in the meantime, you do you. You
don't, yeah,
hang out all the time.
Like, why? I mean, you've got to have some insight on that, right? Like, why? I mean, if you tell me the answer is money, I'll believe you, because I'm pretty sure that's gonna be the answer you tell me. But is there another reason that I don't realize is happening, where it's almost like they want people to be dependent on this broken system? What's the deal?
some of it's money. Some of what I've also seen just in the field, because I didn't always work on my own independently. I actually worked in a low-income clinic that had regular medical doctors. And probably the number one thing that stood out in my mind from being there is I would consult with the docs, and I'd be like, hey, you know, why don't we run, let's go off of Hashimoto's thyroiditis for a minute, because it's a common thyroid condition, folks. It's an autoimmune condition that goes along with the thyroid, and probably about 95% of people that have hypothyroidism have some form of Hashimoto's because it's related to your diet and stress. And what happens is we get the antibodies off. And docs, I was specifically told in Colorado by one particular doctor that, well, I'm not going to run those labs because if I have to run those labs, I have to manage it. And what that means is they're overloaded with their cases of how many people they can see in a particular day, in a week, whatnot. If they go fishing for something, they've got to manage that. So it's more work for them. So we also have a level of this concept of what can you feasibly do within a doctor's visit and what can you feasibly do with someone. And if it gets more complicated, a lot of times folks aren't interested in doing that, which sounds terrible, but that was what I was told. What I have to manage it. And I'm like, but if it helps the person. And the doc argued that, well, if they know that information now, it's going to complicate their treatment plan. And they've got to find somebody to help them with diet. They've got to find someone to do. I'm like, I'm right here. Like, what? What? What's going on? So I think it's a combination of money and the combination of time. Because I think that probably most people that go into being a doctor, at least this stage of the game, have figured out that it's not the most lucrative job out there. It's not. It's not like the old days where, you know, ooh, doctors are rich. Yeah, no, it doesn't work that way. especially if you're in a big system, you know, those docs are really just turned and burned a lot. And so they're stressed out. They're paid on what they complete. And so if there's a complicated case, a lot of times they'll end up in that system where they'd love to help the person, but now it's back to how much they can get paid per hour and make sure they get all of their people in. It's sad. It's sad.
I have never heard something so sad before. I mean, okay, maybe I have, but like, you have blown my mind today and you've painted doctors in a whole new light, right? Because it's so easy to think money, it's got to be about the money. Like, but you're bringing up something so fundamental. It's like they don't have the space to do their jobs well.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And that's why there's a lot of burnout, because there's docs who like want to help, legitimately want to help. And the system with which they work in, they're like, nope, 15 minutes done, out. You need to be able to do that. You're charting times on your own. You're not going to make, you know, extra money. So if you add things to someone's protocol or you have to look and review more labs or extended stuff, it dings against what income you can make. And you also can get written up and all kinds of things. It's
my goodness,
wild. So
you need to write an expose, the dirty side of doctoring. Oh my goodness. Oh man, I had no idea that. I mean, I've heard the thing about the 15 minutes and stuff like that, but I didn't realize how much deeper that went.
Yeah. Wow. Depending on the facility that someone works for, I have a couple of good friends that work at within a facility in Tacoma, and yeah, they're like, if you're not on that 15 and you don't hurry up with your charting, you're not getting paid if you don't chart within a timely manner and things of that nature. So
what a terrible way to, like, oh my goodness. You know, I was asked recently what I would do, like if I could wave a magic wand to work on the food industry, what I would do. And I said, actually, I wouldn't do one thing. I would just want like $50 billion. That would be what I would do, because with $50 billion, I feel like I could assemble a team of people to then help me tackle all of the problems, right? I don't want to fix one problem. I want to fix all the problems. And I feel like, and I'm sure you're going to back me up on this one. In fact, I know you will, because if you don't, I'm not going to talk to you for at least 5 minutes. But in reality, right? So many of these problems could be eliminated with diet and lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Like, we are failing the entire population from the get-go, right? If we were to correct diet and lifestyle when mothers are pregnant, like, let's go to every pregnant woman right now and let's just start the cycle, because it's going to take, you know, 20 years to fix this. But like, if we were to start fixing this from the ground up, doctors would have a lot less customers, which means every customer gets better quality care. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the real goal here? Shouldn't that be the real goal? You know, it speaks so deeply to the greed element, in my opinion, because it's like, okay, why do we have a broken food system? because you have certain companies who want to charge you $2.69 for a package of 18 cookies, I'm guessing. I actually don't know how many are in the package, but like 18 cookies that are full of chemicals that we know jack up your brain, right? They literally create essentially a form of addiction that keep you coming back for more, okay? So they're getting you to eat these products that, quite frankly, they know should not be consumed regularly, right? Like, listen, guys, if you want to eat one of these cookies every quarter, like, I got no problem with that. But most households are buying these packages of cookies every week, right? And so, like, three or four people are knocking out a package of cookies or even two packages of cookies, plus the chips, plus the soda, plus, right? And then the scarier thing that most people don't realize is grass. So generally regarded as safe is like this thing where ingredients essentially don't have to be proven that they are safe to consume. We're just assuming they're safe. Mm-hmm. But even scarier, as if that's not bad enough, no one's actually studied the combined effect. Nobody actually knows what happens when you eat that package of cookies plus that package of chips plus that soda with the combined negative effect of what's in them. Because we know, like, okay, fine, eat one cookie, you're gonna be fine. It's really not a big deal. But within a week, if you've eaten 20 of them, plus three bags of chips that are full of who knows what, plus a 2-liter bottle of soda, that's a lot. That's a lot of stress on your body. And then you're gonna do it again next week, and maybe even eat out at a restaurant where you know that they're just ordering cheap junk from Sysco, right? And then maybe you're too tired to cook Friday nights, you order in a pizza with that soda. And we're not talking like, you know, gourmet, thin crust, organic pizza. We're talking like, you know, the $5 pizzas. So over the course of 2 weeks, what's your toxic load, right? Like, what burden have you put on your body? Then, like, let's take an even bigger step back. You do it in the winter months, right? So now you've got low sunlight, low exercise. You know, maybe you're not sleeping as well. So it's like, you're not even giving yourself a fighting chance to rebuild and repair after exposing yourself to all this stuff. And I know it can sometimes feel like it's just a cookie, right? But it's not just a cookie. I kind of just proved it's not just a cookie.
We don't even know really what it is. I mean, here's, I think, something, if we tie it back into the Whole Foods thing, because I'll see a lot of people will go and get the 365 brand cookies. Okay. And they look just like the Keebler ones that like are the club ones. They look exactly the same, and they're from the 365 brand. And they're like, but it's okay, it's from Whole Foods. And I'm like, well, it's still processed. You still have a processed product. Now, that label might not say that there's BHT and all of the different things in there that are the processing items. But we have this truth in labeling that can be fudged by 20%, folks.
Yeah.
So if it looks like the same thing, it's like the Oreos that come from, that are the organic Oreos. There's a couple brands. I'm not going to name everybody's brand out here and call everybody out, but they look just like Oreos. But we have this joke between my girlfriend and I, like, look, no calories because it's natural. And then we've got Oreos, which we're like, I can't have those, but I'll take those natural ones. And you have to think to yourself, okay, clearly in a factory, there's the goo, the cream in between. What makes a goo like that? Just so, like, hard. What, you know, it didn't, you know, there's an Oreo trees, so.
You know, that's the scary thing, too. Like, people don't realize, if you can't create it at home in your own kitchen, especially the texture part, like the way that it gets hard and stuff, that's not normal, right? Yeah. That is, I had forgotten that they were hard, because you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not gooey. Like if you made it yourself, you would have more, and you have experience from running a bakery. It would be kind of like the goo in between, you know, like an eclair or something. No, that's
too. Yeah. It'd be closer to a frosting. In a home environment, even under refrigeration, you can't quite get it to behave exactly the same. The crunchy part of the cookie, that's not the problem. But that cream-filled center, whatever they're doing to it, they have definitely altered it to get it to behave that way. and be shelf stable and last for that many months upon months upon months, right? That's the other thing. You guys, if you're buying something that doesn't expire or doesn't grow mold, what are you eating?
Yeah, you have to think about this. And I think this is something that with cereals, let's go with cereals, for example, because a lot of people will buy the box cereal and maybe they'll buy the, you know, Cascade brand that's organic, whatever, or maybe, you know, you'll buy one of the other Mothers or whatever that one is I've seen out there. You know, that doesn't come in those shapes naturally. And that cornflakes, like the natural cornflakes, obviously, and rice, Raisin Bran and all that doesn't come looking like that. So how do they get it to not mold? Something's getting in there as a preservative. Now you'll see, like, you'll see lecithin quite often. I find out a lot of people react to lecithin. Do you find that?
I have not seen that. Well, okay. I have in that sometimes it's derived from soy. Mm-hmm. I have not seen people who are not allergic to soy or allergic to sunflower complaining of, well, okay, maybe I've seen like two people, but it's not, I don't see a lot of people that don't have the allergy to what it was derived from that are reacting to it.
Yes. Yeah. And folks, yes, that is the thing, because sunflower lecithin is something that they're using instead of soy lecithin, but like most candy bars, if they're not like batch made at home or in a cottage kitchen by someone, you're looking at soy lecithin as your emulsifier there in the product. And so this can be an issue if you have a soy allergy. But the other thing I see with these is, where's I going to go with this? I'm going to have to think about that. Whoops, my brain just went. But in the candy world, I see a lot of interesting things happen. Ah, I know what it is. Some of the, and it's not candy, it's more of like the bars and the like energy bars and a lot of the protein powders that have MCT oil.
Okay.
So many people have issues with palm that they're not realizing that the MCT oil doesn't always mean coconut. It can also mean palm. Do you see that quite often?
I've seen more and more palm and coconut problems in general. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of like pea protein, where we're seeing this huge rise in people with a pea protein allergy. And the working theory is they're just using it so much, where before we weren't using it at all. And now we're kind of exposing people to these hyper concentrated forms of foods in unnatural ways. And it's like, and not only that, but it's like, we already have people with weakened systems, right? If you take someone with a broken down system, they're not going to process and digest the food properly. Mm-hmm. They just won't. They kind of can't, right? Like on principle. And so maybe that's kind of what takes us back to the original question of, when everybody is owned by the same parent company, why is that such a problem? Well, if you're going to brand X because of how they process their foods and the fact that, you know, they carefully source everything and it's super duper this, that, and the other, and now they're bought by brand C, who doesn't do that and who loves cutting costs, when they get a hold of brand X, they're going to start cutting costs. Because let me tell you guys, they didn't buy the company out of the goodness of their heart. They bought the company to make a profit. Mm-hmm. And so what they do, one of the first things they do before they even buy the company, is they look at what kind of ROI, return on investment, what are we going to get out of this, right? And they even start getting the company to do things before the purchase is made, right? And then after the purchase, they start cutting costs. Can we get your boxes printed somewhere else that's cheaper? You know, I realized that you're using a biodegradable package, but we've got this other supplier for this other thing. And now we're going to get your petrochemicals back on your packaging, right? Like we're going to, and that's just one little step. And then it's, can we get the plastic insert from somewhere else that's a little bit cheaper? Let's do that. Oh, you're using organic sunflower oil. You know, we've got a supplier where we can cut 50% off the cost of sunflower oil just by getting it. You know, it's not organic. Don't worry, it's non-GMO, wink, wink. But we can cut the cost by 50%. And, you know, over 2 years, that's a lot of problem. That's literally how they're thinking. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you will see a whole different product within 2 years of that buyout. And it's little stuff like this, little tiny steps.
Yeah. Oh no, it's sneaky. It's sneaky how it like just gets and just kind of infuses itself. Can you share with a couple of folks, the companies that you've seen go from being independent and bought out by big, like a couple on the top of your head, if you have a couple just to share?
I think the biggest ones I can think of would be, well, who makes that bar? Was it Luna Bar got bought out? No, I think Kashi got bought out, but that was years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy Life, that was a big one in the allergy world.
Let's talk about
that. Was like five, that was about maybe 5 years ago, maybe. But when it happened, it was a big deal because they were bought by Mondelez, who I think also owns Oreo or something like that. Like Mondelez owns stuff that you wouldn't think of. But the one that really bugs me, it's Hain Celestial. I hate Hain Celestial. They're cool, but I kind of don't like them. Number one, their customer service is awful. You can never actually talk to who makes the food. So like if I, and this is really said from a food allergy standpoint, if I were to call, say, Cook's Vanilla, they are independently owned. They're located in California. These organic ingredients, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. I can call them directly and ask a bunch of questions. I can literally talk to their flavor chemical dude. Okay. If they were to get purchased by Hain Celestial, I would never be able to contact them again, ever. Because Hain basically puts up a wall and you have to go through like this third-party customer service system. And they have like a list of answers that they will stick to, like a script, and they won't say anything outside of it. Doesn't matter who you email, doesn't matter who you call or who you think you're calling, you will never talk to the company again. Unless you're in the know and you're like me and you go to trade shows, in which case you happen to be at the trade show and you get their business card and you're like, oh, you guys got bought out. I can't call you anymore. And they're like, oh yeah, about that. Isn't it so? And they see this as a great move, right? Companies getting bought out or companies going up to scale and getting a co-packer, which is a nightmare for food allergies. They think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And it's essentially the unfortunate evolution of the product, right? Because it starts out in someone's kitchen. And that's usually when it's most expensive and it's closest to nature, right? That's the unfortunate truth in all of this. Then they figure out, you know, how to get into a farmer's market. And then they realize they need to speed up production because they can only make so much in their little kitchen. And then they might end up at the local commercial kitchen that you can rent out by the hour or whatever. So now they've got access to a whole different set of wholesale ingredients. This is where, in some cases, they stick to their natural organic path. And then with others, they start down the evil road of, you know, additives and weirdness and whatever. And they have these little incubators where they will literally help you get going. Okay. And they'll hook you into the right things and get you the right shipments and all that sort of stuff. And then you're producing in their kitchen once a month or once every week or whatever. And now you start getting distribution and you start off locally within your county or within your state and then your region, right? Some stores like Costco, for example, it's done by region, not by state. So you have to be able to supply a certain number of stores, right? So now you've got to make sure you have enough production and you can do it on time and all these things. And this all means that, number one, you're running a numbers game, right? Because if Costco says, we will give you $1 a bar, but it's costing you $1.25 to produce the bar, right away, you've got to reduce cost by 50 cents at the minimum. Because if you can't even make 25 cents off the bar, we have a problem, right? Or you need someone else to come in and purchase additional bars at a higher cost, right? So we're still looking at cost cutting. We're still looking at scaling up. How do we do this affordably? We have to cut the quality of our ingredients. What choice do you have at that point? If you want the big fish customer like a Costco or whoever, or a Walmart, right? Walmart's a fascinating story because I can't stand Walmart, like on principle, right? But what's interesting is when Walmart jumps, everybody says how high. In fact, do you know the story of the barcode? Oh, it's a good one.
Tell the barcode story.
The barcode, when it was first created, was not widely adopted. People didn't understand really the potential of a barcode and what it could mean for efficiency, right? And then just like getting products moved along throughout these systems. And then Walmart came along and said, this is genius. So then they said, within the next year, anyone who wants to sell in Walmart has to have a barcode. So what happened? All these products magically got barcodes overnight. And then it just became the thing because, well, if everybody else is doing it, I might as well do it too. And then because Walmart was doing it, other stores started adopting the barcode. And within a couple of years, barcodes were the new normal.
Yeah.
Like they went from zero to hero because Walmart said jump, you know, and it reminds me, unfortunately, of Whole Foods pre-buyout. Do you remember when Whole Foods said I think they said 2021, anything made with any form of genetically modified ingredients had to be labeled to be sold in Whole Foods. Do you remember that?
I do remember that whole thing. And then there was a scandal.
And then it never happened, right? Deadline came and went. And it's never going to happen, you know? And that's what's even worse is like, now they've changed it. They don't want to call it GMOs. Now they want to call it bioengineered, right? And put a little happy, like literally a sun with a happy face to, in terms of marketing, trick you, right? This is all one giant trick. In fact, if you don't know this, the Grocery Buyers Association, I think that's what it's called. No, is that the grocery buyer? There's essentially a huge lobbying group that represents the interests of these companies. That's it. That's all they do. They make sure that rules and laws and regulations are made to benefit these companies to sell more stuff. At the end of the day, that's what this is about, you guys. They are trying to sell you a product. In fact, here's the real challenge. Ready? You know what we should do? We should do one of those 30-day challenges. We should make one. We should challenge everyone. Go 30 days without commercially snacky foods. Like, I'm cool with you still buying your box pasta because I do not expect you to make pasta at home. That's just too much, right? I'm talking cut the cookies, cut the crackers, the jerky, the snacks, like cut it all. Mm-hmm. Cut it all out for 30 days. Number one, see how much money you save. But number two, see how much better you feel.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. I'm not even asking you to exercise. Everybody else wants you to do a push-up challenge. I don't want that.
Yeah.
I'm just asking you to cut out the bad food for 30 days and see how you feel.
Maybe we should do that like the whole month of February till our next session. We tell folks, look, let's try it and see what happens. I'm down.
I mean, it's funny because I'm sort of a cheater. I can't buy anything. So I already win. But I know for some people it's gonna be incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. Here's a tip I can give you for those who love soda, who cannot seem to give up their soda, get a soda stream, make it at home, right? You can carbonize the water. And then add a little, like you can do maple syrup, right? Or you can get those flavor water drops. Make sure you're getting a good brand though. Please do not buy the Crystal Light ones. My goodness. Like that's, and this is what takes us back to even why we even hopped on this conversation today. Because here's the thing, right? People see those Crystal Light drinks or drink mixes or whatever, and they see the word light, okay? They think they're doing themselves a favor. And I am not faulting the consumer for this. That package was designed to trick you.
Oh, it's so deceiving. And sucralose is like, so Splenda, guys, is what one of the sweeteners that are in these things. It causes the most gastric upset I've seen. Like just like sugar alcohols, your sugar-free chocolates, all of those. You want to know why you got diarrhea when you eat those? It's the sugar alcohols. That's probably why. That's probably why you don't have your blood sugar increase because you're pooping your pants.
Right? Well, it's not just that. It's like... I look at things like agave, right? People buy agave and they think they've done so much better for themselves. And I'm like, do you realize how much processing went into transforming agave mm-hmm. from the plant to that product you just bought?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't grow like that.
Right? It's a long way from tequila.
That is the problem, the inherent problem. Like you were saying earlier, Oreos don't grow on trees, right? If you are more than, say, 6... maybe even only 4 degrees removed from the plant product or, you know, the meat product, like the butchered meat. How good is that food for you? Right? Like when I think about a meatball, for example, at least one that you make at home, you're like within 1 degree of the plant and the meat, right? You buy ground meat. It's straight up from a butchered cow or pig or whatever animal you're using. And then you buy your seasonings, which are, they should in theory just be from the plant. You mix it up, you cook it. Some people add an egg, So the egg is going to be 1 degree from the animal. You know, the real trouble is the breadcrumbs, because mm-hmm. that's got, you know, well, I mean, an organic breadcrumb, I think, is better in theory, but the conventional stuff, you've got multiple layers of ingredients and degrees of separation from you and the real thing. But if you just did meat, egg, and seasoning, you're within 1 degree of the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's real food to me, you know? It's once you take that Oreo and, like you said, that cream in the middle, how many degrees are you away from the real deal at that point? You know?
It's a good question. It's a good question. And I love that you're bringing it up, because I think that's something that I really wanted folks to think about from this podcast, is like that bag of Oreos, that bag of potato chips. I mean, yeah, it's potato, but we've deep fried it. We've, you know, seasoned it, however they did that. And God knows what the oil, you know, is and how rancid that oil is. I mean, there's
lots. Oh, that's the other thing too.
Yeah. Let's talk about rancid oils for a minute with all the snacks.
Rancid oil will mess you up, you guys. And it's sometimes it's the type of oil, it's the temperature, it's how long it's been used, but rancid oils can mess up your system. It is not good for you. You know, and the funny thing is like, I'm not against deep frying foods. I'm actually not. I just think, number one, we should not consume it too often, right? I'm a huge fan of moderation. Like, I think people should eat cookies, cakes, and ice cream. There, I said it out loud. I think they should. I think they should be eating it made from better for you ingredients, though, right? I don't think you should be eating Ben and Jerry's. Well, I don't know. Are they one of the better bands? I don't actually know. I feel like they try to at least greenwash their labels to look better, but I don't know if they're actually better, because I don't buy the product.
They're greenwashed, just like other companies out there. I don't actually know 100% who owns Ben and Jerry's at this stage of the game. My guess would be that they are not owned anymore by Ben and Jerry.
Yeah.
that's my guess, because there's a lot of ingredients in there. When you look at the labeling, you'll see some pretty good processed stuff in there.
Yeah. Well, especially the ones, I'm guessing, with like the cookie chunks and the brownie chunks and the whatever chunks. Like, the way, you know, here's a really easy test for you guys as listeners. If you want to know more about like ice cream in general, compare vanilla ice creams.
Mm-hmm.
Vanilla ice cream on the surface should be no more than 6 ingredients. You can even get away with less. Mm-hmm. After 5 or 6, you have to start asking why. Mm-hmm. Why is this here? What purpose does it serve? What is it doing? Because you can make it at home with 5 ingredients. When I make vanilla ice cream at home, it's, you can either use milk or dairy-free milk. In my case, we use oil to add the cream effect, and then salt, vanilla, and a sweetener. That's 5 ingredients. That's mm-hmm. all it takes to make good vanilla ice cream. Mm-hmm. So what are you eating?
Yeah, no, right? Vanilla, that's a good one that you mentioned, because I'll compare them between the different brands, just because sometimes there'll be one that I've never heard of that brand. It's on sale and it's in a pint and it looks like it was made locally. And then I look at it and it says high fructose corn syrup. I'm like,
oh,
why did you put that in there? That just happened actually while we've been traveling here in Montana. There's a local company in Montana that I was loving what everything was saying. And then I got to the high fructose corn syrup. I'm like, everything else looked fine until you did that.
I feel so offended for you right now. You know, it's so funny. People these days, they get offended by the weirdest things. People should be offended by grocery stores. Yeah. See, we're getting upset at the wrong things, right? We've lost the ability to have a conversation and disagree with someone and walk away friends. That, number one, has got to end, folks. We need to be able to just have a nice, respectful chit chat and share our opinions. No, grocery stores should offend us. Mm-hmm. We should be offended by the trash they are trying to get us to eat, because at the end of it, you are what you eat. Why did we stop telling people that? We should be telling people this in kindergarten. You are what you eat. If you eat poor food, you will be of poor health. It is almost impossible to find someone over the age of 25 in the United States eating crap food who is in good health.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, and because people think, well, I ate McDonald's as a kid. Yeah, because your cells were reproducing at like crazy high rates. You didn't feel the effect yet. And that's the big lie that's being sold to us. They get you hooked while you're young and your body can repair faster. And then when you're older and you break down, they're like, hey, Big Pharma's got you covered now, you know? And it's like, this is terrible. This is not how humans were designed to live, you know?
No. And I think that's why I have so many gut issues. And I think that's why the pandemic blew up to the point that it is, you know, regardless of what, you know, side of fence anyone's on, it's look at this. We're going to get vaccines to protect ourselves from a virus. Like, okay, I get it. But I'm also like, why are we not, in addition to talking about vaccines, why are we not talking about what kind of foods can we eat to boost our immunity? You say that online, you get shut down. I mean, it's like,
why? It bothers me because like McDonald's was open and gyms were closed. Tell me how that's about our health. Please tell me how that's about our health. You know, it at its core, everything was done wrong. I don't care which side of the fence you're on any of this stuff. No one can sit and say that it was a good idea to lock people up in their homes, refuse them sunlight and exercise, keep letting them buy junk foods, alcohol, sugars. I mean, how many, they were joking about the COVID-19 as in the 19 pounds you would put on. Remember that back in the first year, first 6 months, really? So now we're getting you to gain unhealthy weight. It's not like you're weight training and putting on like good weight. You're putting on bad weight. How was any of that helpful? Right? I don't care what side you're on. You can't tell me that makes sense.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that that helped people come out healthier.
Mm-mm.
You know, and it's not like they said, well, while you're all trapped at home, we're going to give everybody free access to like a new workout channel. And 24 hours a day, we're going to have different workout people on, and we'll do like different music types and different workout types. And, you know, like, it's not like you were given real tools to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Did that happen? Because last time I checked, it didn't.
Nope. Everyone who tried to do that got censored is what happened.
Exactly. Like, you were deemed a quack because you said, basically, get your sunshine, do the grounding, and do the work to take care of yourself. That made you a quack. I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm.
All common sense went out the window. It does not make sense, you know? And it really just comes down to scaring people to death, right?
I mean, wouldn't need to be scared if we could focus a little bit more on things that were closest to nature. And like you and I talked about beginning with all this, growing our own food.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. You guys, as part of your 30-day challenge, just grow anything in your backyard. Legit. Find a book. What's important to know is what zone you live in. I think there's 9 or 12 zones in the United States. And each zone will give you different information on like when the best time to plant is, the first frost, and what kind of plants you can most likely successfully grow without the use of a greenhouse and that sort of stuff, right? So you figure out which zone you live in, and then pick something and grow it. It can be kale. I don't care what it is. Grow an onion. Just grow something. Get in touch with your dirt, you know, and understand the process. Because, you know, what's interesting, going back to you are what you eat and all that sort of stuff, right? How many people are vitamin D deficient? When we look at plants, what do plants, like, let's go back to third grade science here. What do plants need? Water, oxygen, sunlight, right? That was drilled into us as children. Why did we forget it? Who knows? If plants need it, don't we kind of need it too?
Our cells are very similar to plants. We convert sunlight into things like vitamin D, but we also use like vitamin A, and like we do all these cool things that plants do. And we don't get the recognition that we we do these things. Nobody's talking about it. It's kind of amazing. We're kind of cool. Plants are kind of cool too.
It's true.
Yeah. All right. So growing. Now you're saying growing kale. Now some people might be listening to this and this is going to go out in January, end of January here. So folks might be going, okay, what do I do if I'm in a spot where there's snow on the ground? It's the end of January. We can grow things in the little pot.
You grow it. Yeah. You grow it inside your house. You can start. So there are certain things that you can buy, right? Like chives, etc., where you can absolutely grow them in a windowsill. Same thing with like basil. Super easy, low maintenance plants that just grow on the windowsill. So you don't even have to be outside for those who can't be. You have options.
What's, do you have a favorite like supplier for buying seeds and soil and those
types of things? I don't. You know what it is? There's a grocery store that's like almost 100% organic in our area and they sell organic seeds. And that's where I've purchased them before. And then we also have a place near us. Maybe it's like 40 minutes away. And it's like all supernatural organic growing supplies and stuff. In fact, that's where we were able to find insanely expensive corn-free dirt to buy so that we could try to grow food for me to eat. It was like, you have no idea. Pretty much all soil that you can purchase is contaminated with corn because they add chicken manure.
Oh,
yeah, something a lot of people don't even think about, but which I don't blame you. Like, if you don't need to think about it, please don't. And the particular dirt that we found, it was really funny. They were like, yeah, did you know if you grow marijuana, this is some of the best soil for marijuana? And we were like, oh, okay, because that's not what we're growing, but thanks, right?
Perfect.
I guess that's the perks of being in the city. But yeah, no, they sell a lot of great quality stuff, great quality seeds. And one of our kids wants to live on a farm. And so she's learning how to like save seeds just from regular stuff that we purchase and things like that. And she's been maintaining the backyard and, you know, we are not avid growers. You know, I joke that I do not have a green thumb. I really don't. But I try here and there, you know, and I think that's really important. And maybe the more you cook food, the more you realize what's going on. And I'm not talking like you heat up a box of Hamburger Helper. I'm talking about when you purchase, you know, 16 different types of produce for the week and you prep them all up and you understand, you know, that dirt is on your potatoes and on your onions and on your tomatoes and whatever else. And like when you're 1 degree from that plant and you're touching it and you're prepping it and you're seeing it all, it's like, there's a connection there to your food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we've lost that. We need gardens in school. You know, kids need to be learning these skills because they're becoming like these almost like lost arts. And I'm like, a society cannot survive without these kinds of life skills.
Yeah. No, I'm wondering why we're not doing that. I used to, way back in the day when I lived in Colorado, I was teaching cooking classes to kids and their parents. Mm-hmm. And it's so much fun. And it was like the best thing ever. And then we started teaching them how to grow things. And it was just like one of the best thing, like programs that I've seen out there. And I know it still probably goes today. It's still part of the Feeding America conglomerate. So yes, Conagra Foods does sponsor it.
Okay. So
folks, that is big, the big wigs in the food department. But you don't have to purchase what they tell you to create good stuff. And so I was kind of in the program being like, what can we make? What can we grow? And we had a greenhouse and things of that nature. So, you know, I really think it is wise to start thinking about as we get towards spring and the end of winter here, how can you do even just maybe a container garden or even an aero garden if that works for you? Something.
Something. Like, I just want people to just touch the dirt, you know, and just watch it go from seed to consumable and just see that process of growth every day. It changes you as a person to watch that happen. You know, it's like, because like for those of you who are parents, right? I know you already sort of have this connection because you've got a kid. So you understand that whole development process. But, you know, with children, for example, it takes a long time sometimes for us to see the results. Whereas with a plant, it's like 60 days, right? The more faster growing stuff from 0 to 60, literally, you have something you can eat. Mm-hmm. And so you get to see that transformation a lot faster. And it's like, whoa, that's so cool, you know, and you get to see the little things that plants do. People don't realize it, but plants will like naturally position themselves toward the sun, right? Like they know what's up. They absolutely know what's up, right? Like, what's wrong with us? Why aren't we doing this? You know, so, you know, growing something, I think, is it's just a really neat experience. And I think that the more people have it, the more it all starts to click and fall into place. And I think it gets easier to say, you know, I don't need that box of cookies. I don't need that box of crackers. I don't need XYZ. You know, it's interesting because I think most people have these cravings or what they think are cravings. And I think oftentimes it's really linked to what you are deprived and deficient of. And what I've noticed, I don't know if you've seen this, but when people make the switch from the standard American diet, also known as SAD, when they switch over to a more natural organic diet and they're eating the healthy fats and they're eating the clean proteins and all these different things, the cravings for junk and snacky snack type foods goes right out the window. Within 30 to 60 days, they stop craving the Oreos and the ice creams and the crackers and the whatever else is people buy these days.
Yeah, no, it's like the first step we have to think about is like just get it out of the house and be like, I'm done with this. I'm not going to take this again. Like, I'm done. Like, leave it out, and you'll be surprised how your brain will change around that.
I feel like maybe that needs to be our mission, right? Like, let's just revolutionize the world and get this stuff out of people's houses. Man, ConAgra would hate us.
True story. Most of like Mondelez, I mean, that company owns half the like cookies and crackers out there, folks. You should read the things like Kraft. They've taken over some Kraft, I think, too. I think they're like merged with Kraft or something.
That's crazy.
It's bigger than we think, folks. Read Mars Candy Bars company owns a lot of different things too.
PepsiCo owns a lot. Coca-Cola owns a lot. Johnson and Johnson owns a lot, especially in the baby and non-food stuff. You know, and the thing is you might be thinking, oh, that's not a big deal, right? These companies have gotten in so much trouble for putting ingredients in that are like cancer causing, things like that, right? Like they are not looking out for you. Like, I don't think they're maliciously saying, hey, let's find the most evil ingredients and let's use them. That's not what's going on. Please don't be confused. But they're also not saying, let's nourish our customers. Right? And that's really the key here. That's why you pay $8 for that box of cookies, because usually the person is saying, if you're going to have a cookie, at least let me nourish you a little bit, right? Let me, you know, reduce the hit to your toxic load. Let me make sure that you have a fighting chance to process this food. You know, I'll give you the organic cacao powder and the organic this and the organic sugar and the organic this and that and the other. And I applaud those companies because it is not easy working within that system, because that's the system our bakery is in, right? It's all better for you, organic or non-GMO products. You know, it's expensive. People wonder why it's $3 for a mini cupcake. Well, when you see the prices that we pay for our raw materials, you'll start to understand real fast.
And I think that's one of the issues that a lot of people will kind of push back on in terms of the natural foods and some of the higher end products. So like, oh, it's bougie. I've heard, oh, it's bougie. That's why it's that. I'm like, no. The cost of the product. You know, my dad's has been like, why are we paying $8 for a loaf of bread at the farmer's market? I'm like, well, Dad, because all of the ingredients that these folks put in, and this was one sourdough that was, you know, home like fermented the whole nine, right? And my dad's like, why would you pay $8? Well, because your $1.50 loaf of bread, buddy, read the ingredients. It's
Well, you know, the hidden cost of food is something that is not taught in schools, right? And what that means for you guys listening is the $1.50 loaf is $1.50 up front. But as your body breaks down and develops health problems because you're eating the $1.50 loaf and the bottle of soda and all these other things, right? The hidden cost is then millions of dollars in your ongoing prescriptions, in your operations, in your ill health, in the missed time from work and all these other things, right? Your quality of life, all of it all declines. because you didn't give yourself the proper building blocks from the get-go. Mm-hmm. Like, it's as simple as that. And there is a huge cost, you know, and it always goes back to the laws of supply and demand, which again, we're taught in school, and for whatever reason, people stop thinking about it. The reason it's $8 a loaf right now is because enough people have not made the switch. If everybody, and I mean everybody, well, okay, I can't say everybody, because then there'd be like a run on food. There's not enough of it right now, because again, supply and demand. But if 30 to 40% of consumers tomorrow woke up and said, you know what, I'm just going to eat the way Kathleen eats, and I'm going to buy the organic stuff all the time. Guess what? The costs go down. Mm-hmm. Because there's more of us. Mm-hmm. We, the people, have the power. We just keep giving away our power. That's the problem. We need to respect ourselves enough to not give away our power in the grocery store.
Oh my God. Well said. We need like a t-shirt that says that, like walking in the grocery store. I am not giving my power up.
I'm not giving up my power or my dollar. You can't have either. Yeah. Because no, you know, and again, going back to that idea of a 30-day challenge, like, is it going to kill you to give up Cheetos for 30 days? No. Cheetos is not an essential food, right? Like, they're just not. So you'll be okay.
It's true. Yeah. What about these, you know, one of the things I think some people might be thinking about is, because we had touched on it about the organic labeling, and then we didn't talk about the non-GMO Project Verified.
Oh.
Tell folks your opinion on that, because I know we had touched on it once and you were like, oh Lord, I want you to talk about it, because I will look at products and it'll, you know, and I know brands that aren't going to genetically modify stuff, but I'm also looking at the, you know, I'm thinking about some pretzel crisps that are very snack, you know, like always on the end caps of the grocery store these days. They're the thin ones and it says non-GMO wheat. And I go, okay, all right, is that legit? This non-GMO Project Verified department, or are we just companies paying into that just to help with marketing labels?
Right. Okay. I think that when the project started, it was so legit. It was so great. It was so needed, right? Mm-hmm. Because health-minded people wanted an easy way to kind of navigate stores and just know what to avoid right away, right? What's important to know up front is not everything is legally allowed to be sold in stores genetically modified, right? Like bananas. We don't have genetically modified bananas, okay? So if you see, you know how like sometimes you see gluten-free on milk and it makes you angry because you're like, duh, okay, right? Like if we need to put a label on gluten-free salt, I'm going to ask why. What happened in that marketing department? There are certain things where gluten-free should not even be considered. Like with maple syrup, I should not see a gluten-free sticker on maple syrup. Now, I understand why some companies buy into it, because they want to have that extra little selling point and tap into that community of purchasers or whatever, but fine, you know, it's your marketing money to spend, but it's not necessary. And right. So the same is true of the non-GMO project, right? Some of the stuff getting labeled doesn't actually need the label. And it's those companies who normally have products that are full of CRAP. You look at their product labels, and you're seeing all these preservatives and all these things, but hey, we're non-GMO Project Verified. Like, are you serious right now? Oh my goodness. I cannot. Like, I get so offended by food. Can I just tell you, like, if you haven't picked up on that already, you guys, I get so offended by what's in these stores. And I'm not offended for me, because I don't even buy this stuff. I'm offended for you. I'm offended for your children, because that's who they're trying to sell to, right? Go to a standard grocery store and put your head at the level that your child's eyes are at, either when they're standing next to you or when they're riding in the cart. And you're going to see a whole different world full of color and characters. And you're going to go, wait a second. And then you're going to pick up a label, and then you're going to understand why your kid is sick. And if that doesn't offend you, I can't help you. Like, I need people to dig down and start getting mad and start saying, no, I will not do this to my children. Right? Yeah. because this has been one giant crime done to all of society. You go back to World War II, and that's where this all starts. Convenience foods in World War II was the greatest ripoff ever, right? We brought TVs into the home. I actually got into an argument with someone about this because I was like, they brought TVs in the home. They told women to go get jobs, and then they brought in convenience foods. And then the other person was like, yeah, well, that was the only option they had. And I said, no, it wasn't. Consumers could have demanded better, period. You cannot convince me otherwise. You look at a country like France, okay? There was a great documentary a couple years ago that showed how in grade schools in France, kids are eating organic, fresh cooked food every day. And the French government spends less per student on food than the US system. And our system is upside down, backwards, and all sorts of messed up, okay? Like, don't even get me started. Parents should be pissed off by what's being fed to their kids at school under the guise of healthy lunches. Please, that is not, okay? And so we look at these systems, and it really dates back to World War II, because that's when, hey, look how convenient this is. You can grab this food in this plastic tray made from petrochemicals, and you can even leave the plastic film on, just poke holes on it and stick it in your microwave, because we know those are good for you too. And look at that. Ding, dinner's done. When you used to be a busy housewife and now you're out making all this money because now we keep telling you to buy more stuff. Buy the latest vacuum cleaner because it's so great. Buy the new car because it's so great. Buy these new clothes because they're so great. Buy, 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 consume, consume. That was the message. So of course we had to make something easier for you because you were just so tired at the end of the day. So we made food easy for you. So easy that we made your kids sick, right? Like, people don't get it. And it drives me up a wall, because even when you talk to them about it, right? Even when they understand it, they go, yeah, you're right. And then they put the Häagen-Dazs in their cart.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, cool. So you get it. You just don't care, I guess.
That's what
I want. Oh, no, I care. I just don't care enough. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
That, yeah. And I think, and I bet, you know, I think we talked about this before, how you as a doctor, like, you have to face that as well. And that's the hardest part. Yeah. People who know, but still do it anyway.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy to what I hear. You know, there's that side of it, but there's also the side of, well, it's too expensive. I said, well, how much do you want to spend on medications? You know, when you get older, or even in the next couple of years, if you keep doing, you know, eating these certain processed foods, it's not going to end well. And there's so many different ways that these different foods could be impacting your health. Not only we talk about the gut, what about your blood-brain barrier? Because with a lot of the preservatives in the foods, it affects the blood-brain barrier. You know, what is happening? We have leaky brains and leaky guts.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because I want to blow the lid off the idea that food is too expensive. Mm-hmm. If you stick to the perimeter or a farmer's market, it costs you time, but it is very affordable. Mm-hmm. Very, very affordable. It's only when you start trying to buy packaged goods, or like you said, an $8 loaf of bread.
Yeah.
That's when, which I'm not knocking your bread at all. But that's really where the prices start to come in. Anytime someone has to process the food for you into anything else, the cost just double, triples, whatevers. Because a pint of organic ice cream costs the same as a gallon of organic milk. Okay.
That's true.
I can make way more organic ice cream at home if I just buy the individual raw materials, especially using a store like Costco, because they sell organic milk and it's like $2.50 a gallon or $3 a gallon, right? So that's why I say, like, I'm a fan of people eating their cookies and ice creams and cakes and whatevers. I just think you should be making them at home and then use your own freezer so that, you know, make yourself a batch of cookies and then eat a few and freeze the rest and pull them out a couple a day or whatever. Like, number one, you know what's in them. Yep. Number two, it didn't cost you. What's so funny is there's a brand who I love, so I'm not going to throw them under the bus because they use like really good ingredients and stuff like that. Great people. Lovely people. Love the, like, I love them. Their cookies are $6.99 a box and you get 12 cookies. And the cookies are like the size of a lid of a spice jar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They're not so like this big, right? They're not huge cookies for $6.99. Okay. And you might be wondering what you're paying for. Those cookies cost probably 80 cents to produce. Okay. But we had to pay for their overhead, the packaging, the printing, the distribution. They, of course, have to sell it to the stores where there's enough markup where the store can make their money. Like, everybody's got to make profit that touches this package of cookies. So it goes from an 80 cent product to $6.99 or whatever. And it's why, like, if you ever watched a show like Shark Tank, I used to not watch it, and then my kids got me into it. And they'll tell you, so what's your cost of production? And someone will say 12 cents, 35 cents landed. Okay. And then you go to the store and you're paying $25 for this product. Most people even then aren't saying, why am I paying $25 for the product? They just accept it, right? You have to look at all the steps. And so I am a huge fan of just doing it yourself because, you know, if I buy the ground meat and the seasonings, I can make five times the amount of meatballs than if I were to buy the fridge. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like, yes, processed foods are expensive, whether they be organic processed or conventionally processed. I don't care what kind of process. If they're processed, they're expensive. It's just like those crustable PB&J thingies. Have you seen those? Yeah. That parents buy for their kids? And it ends up being something like, I don't know, $3 a sandwich or some crazy number per sandwich. And you look at that, like when my kids were little, they went on a trip and the place had these crustable things. And so of course they lived like kings and ate crustables, right? And so then they were like, can we buy these? And I'm like, no. They were like, well, why not? And I'm like, have you seen the price, you guys? Like, you realize for the package, for the cost of like one box, which is four inside, that's not even a full week's worth of lunches. I could buy a whole loaf of bread to make double or triple the amount and the peanut butter and the jelly. Hello? Like, people, like, is the convenience really worth that? I don't know. Because I'm not a fan of convenience. I guess I'm a fan of doing everything the hard way. But it's not financially expensive if you're willing to roll up your sleeves and get your hands dirty a little bit.
And I think that's the bottom line. You have to want it. You have to want health. You have to want to feel good. And you have to accept that you're going to spend time meal prepping. I mean, I think I probably spend 2 to 4 hours each week, you know, when I'm home in my groove, I'm meal prepping. And at night I will, you know, if I'm not making dinner, my husband's making dinner. And it's just part of our life. That's what we got into the routine and we just started doing it. And so I think maybe what we should shed some light on is, you know, you've got a bakery, so you know the ins and outs of these recipes, and you have your website that has the recipes for folks to be able to mine these, that they can literally go, okay, write a list. And maybe this is what you tell your clients as well, but I have people write a list of everything processed that they feel like they can't live without. And then slowly we'll start to make those things, like teach them literally how, like give them a recipe, teach them literally how to make those things that are processed at home.
So you know, I don't know that I've ever told anyone that exactly, but I didn't realize that subconsciously I was doing that already. Because when people go like gluten-free, they're like, what about waffles and pancakes and cake? I'm like, it's all done. Like, it's here. Don't worry. So you're right. Like at a subconscious level somewhere, I knew that I had to do that because people panic. Mm-hmm. Right. And should you really be eating waffles every day, even if they're homemade? Probably not. Like you need to throw in some veg and maybe drink a green smoothie or something. Right. But, and that really just speaks to moderation and balance, because you can still get Western illnesses shopping at Whole Foods exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, please don't think that Whole Foods is a magic wand. Because if you still buy cookies, cakes, and candies for a majority of your meals or a majority of your calories, you're still going to end up with cookie, cake, and pie diseases, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you're organic or not, like, you still need to be having the vegetables and whatevers, you know? And for people who, for whatever reason, because I know that there's people who fall into this boat, where even if they stick to the perimeter of the grocery store, they still can't afford it, right? They can't afford organic and all natural. And I respect that. And to that person, what I say is, then start with conventional produce, because conventional produce is better than no produce,
mm-hmm.
right? Still cut out the cookies, crackers, and cakes, and just start buying more conventional produce. Like, nourish yourself. Just start there. Like, start with nourishment and start feeling better, you know?
Mm-hmm. No doubt. I mean, even though it's conventional, yes, it might have some pesticides. Like, honestly, I'd rather have people, and this is what I say all the time, because a lot of people are like, I can't afford all the organics. I'm like, there is the thing is the dirty dozen. And environmentalworkinggroup.org, so EWG.org, guys, you can go right over there and find out what the dirty dozen is of the year. But if you shop around that, you're going to be just fine. And then we were talking the farmer's market, which you're going to find local stuff that it might be conventional, but it's more fresh because your organic, you know, apple came from New Zealand. So you also have to think about where these nutrients are at.
Well, not only that, but a lot of farmers at the farmer's market are using organic growing practices. They just don't have certification. Right. So you'll find quite a few of those where you get to talking to them and you're like, oh, well, this is just as good as, you know, the one with the sticker on it or whatever. You know, and then of course you're eating in season, which mm-hmm. is even better for you. It's just a better system.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's the way we got to be, guys. It's the way we got to get started. So Kathleen, we have talked about a lot of different things today.
Yeah.
And in particular, I think the biggest thing that I want folks to be thinking about, especially if they're battling with food sensitivities, intolerances, allergies, whatever it may be, is that there's hope for you out there. You can minimize your risk of things that are coming at you. And with your website, goraise.net, we've got to tell folks about that. We got to tell them that you've got memberships, you've got recipes. And so she's got the most comprehensive website that also really helps folks with corn allergies, which we will always want to highlight because that's the most extensive one for folks, the most pain in the butt.
Corn is the absolute worst. Oh man, we got to do our corn episode. I don't think we've done one yet, but corn is insane. And so what's so funny? I realized this the other day. I hadn't realized this. The whole website is actually technically corn-free on the surface, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm severely allergic, like we don't use corn. Like there's no corn on the cob, corn product, corn and frozen vegetables. Like there's no corn. And obviously no high fructose corn syrup or anything of that nature. And then we actually have a corn-free button for people, which will filter out for people like myself, things that we call truly corn-free. So things like chicken and pineapple, those are not truly corn-free, right? Chickens are fed corn. Corn is completely all over that system. So we don't call chickens corn-free. Pineapples are sprayed with ripening gases that are corn derived. So we don't call those corn free. So there are certain products where if we know you can't find them truly corn free, we eliminate them from your search result so that you don't even have to worry about it and be like, oh, how come I'm still feeling sick? Well, it's because you're eating corn derivatives without realizing it. So that's just the corn free part of things. But no, what we do is we take a bigger look at food. And it's funny because most of the recipes are from scratch. And we don't use many pre-made products. The only real pre-made product we use is like dairy-free cheese, because making that at home is like a hard pass. I do not expect anyone to make dairy-free cheese at home. You know, and even then it's like, we don't use it a ton because I want to show you that you can have amazing food without the additives and without the stuff. Because for as much as I love dairy-free cheese, some brands, I don't think people should be eating, right? Like, I look at some of those and I'm like, man, that's so bad for you. Like, it's cool that it exists. And I love that somebody's made it, but to get it to perform that way and taste that way, it's weird.
You had to get pee, you know,
same thing is true as like, of like, yeah, like you look at gluten-free products, you like, so I'm a big fan of science-free food, right?
Mm-hmm. And that, I love that.
If you look at meat substitutes, vegan products, dairy-free products that are to replace dairy, so not like a dairy-free cookie necessarily, but more like dairy-free cheeses, those complex dairy product replacements, and then gluten-free products, you look at the ingredients, and oftentimes the replacement is way less healthy for you than what you were getting rid of, mm-hmm. right? Unfortunately, if you buy organic whole milk, the ingredient is whole milk. And then, of course, if you buy a dairy-free substitute, it's whatever their base was, plus water, plus salt, which I'm not against. Usually there's a sweetener, and then it's 2% or less of, and then 20 more ingredients. None of that was in the milk, right? We actually make our own milk at home, and that's one of the reasons. I don't like what's in these products. And then there's the whole issue of shared equipment, which is like for a different day. But Raise is like science-free food. It's real food. It's ingredients you can pronounce. We tell you where to buy everything. Like we set you up so that you just have a real kitchen, like real food, you guys. Because I want you to see, like, it doesn't have to be impossible. There's this really cool series on our website called the Kid 4 Menu series. Mm-hmm. Where for our youngest child, she was having like behavior issues and different things, and it really was just tied to what she was eating. Mind you, we're already a pretty clean eating household. In her case, it was, she was not doing well on a kid to friendly diet. Like, she needed specific red meats and she needed specific vegetables. She needed things that we weren't using enough of. And so I made this whole series that revolves around her and her needs, where you could see how over the course of 5 weeks, you can take pretty much anyone's diet and boost the nutrition infinitely with regular sounding ingredients, with regular amounts of prep. I even did like some prep videos where I showed you how, like a time lapse of how to prep all these ingredients. And you just end up with real food that's super healthy and super nutritious. And for us, you know, for her, when she starts slipping, you know, it's usually 7 to 10 days that I can get her back to a fully operational human by switching out these foods. She's 17, and I'm at the point where I'm like, you got to start looking out for your own health, kiddo. I could be gone tomorrow, and then what are you going to do? Like, you've got to start thinking about these things, you know? Because you know how kids are. They're like, can I just have a bread roll for dinner? No, you cannot have a bread roll for dinner, but it's organic. I don't care that it's organic, because they know, like, that's all I buy. But, you know, kids are still kids, right?
Right.
Are these corn dogs up for grabs? No, they're not. Go eat soup, you know?
Oh man. No, I mean, it's hard. It's hard navigating the world with teenagers who are like, you know, and kids who will see what are at their parents, their friends, you know, places, yeah. and whatnot. But I think, you know, 9 times out of 10, if we can really put that solid foundation, and like you've done with your kids, brought them into the kitchen and got them really involved in what you're doing, I think it's one step at a time. And I think for a lot of parents, you know, not giving up when the first foray into trying to get your kid in the kitchen doesn't work, you got to keep
at it. I think the key on that one is making it fun when they're little. Like, when they are little, there's so many cool things you can do with your kids in the kitchen. You know, and if you have a particularly stubborn child, start with dessert. Obviously it's a better for you dessert, but you start by getting them in the kitchen with dessert and they'll have fun with you, you know, and they'll lick the bowl, right? There's that instant reward. And you just kind of go from there, but absolutely getting your kids in the kitchen, you know. And the thing is too, though, I'm going to be really real with you. You can invest all that time, energy, money, and they still want to eat hot dogs when they're 18, because like, I'm not going to lie to you guys. Like, one of our kids, he loves vegetables. He's the one who's like, can we add some vegetables, you guys? Whenever like the kids are in charge of making food, he'll be like, let's put some broccoli in the oven. Right. Whereas the other two are like, fine, you do it, right? You know, and they want to pass the buck. But, you know, I've got one kid who's always like, can we have hot dogs? Like, fine, you can have hot dogs, you know. But I mean, in our house, it's organic, blah, 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 hot dogs, right? And the funny thing is, I don't buy hot dog buns. So they just eat hot dogs.
Hey, you know, I mean, that's how we roll in our house. And then they came home and wrap a piece of bread around it because I didn't buy a bun. I won't buy the buns anyway.
Yeah, like I'm not buying the buns, you know, and it's funny now that they're adults. And obviously we still do the grocery shopping, but I'm like, if you want that, you're paying for it. And they're like, wait, what? I'm like, if you want, like, why am I spending our money on foods that are not good for you? Like, I don't care if you eat it, but I'm not paying for it. I'm not paying for your ill health. And I'm not paying for your doctor bill either. You know, I tell them. So, yeah.
There you have it. There you have it, guys.
Yeah.
Tell your kids that. Like, I'm not paying for your doctor bills for this. They're on the hook till what, like 26 or so or whatever.
Something like that. But I mean, so the funny thing is like, you know, through their dad's job, everybody's covered. And so I'm like, that's fine and all, but we're not paying their copay. And we're not paying for that thing where you have to meet the minimum. No, if they need something, they're on their own. I am not paying for this.
Yeah.
Like, they need to take responsibility.
I think that's huge. I think that's huge. Here you have it, guys. The world according to Kathleen and child rearing and medical bills.
Oh, man.
I love it. Oh, I've got to go, unfortunately, to another podcast today, but we've had another fun round here, and I hope folks are enjoying our little sessions. We've got another one coming up here in a month, and I'm going to put out the whole challenge yourself not to eat any processed foods for a month here. That's my MO, and I'll be starting that as soon as this podcast drops. So
yeah, I can't wait. Let's do it. Let's help people change for the better.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Hey, Health Junkies, did you know that I have a Facebook group? Yep. We talk all about topics that we are going over on the podcast, but also all kinds of health tips and things of that nature too. So head to Facebook and look for Find Your Health Fix. It is my Facebook group that goes with the Health Fix podcast. Once again, Find Your Health Fix. Look forward to see you over there.